All right, nothing like a little country music to kick things off. How many of you love country music? All right, everybody with their hand up is a good Christian. All right? If you don't like country music, you're going to hate heaven. All right? Because it is the music of heaven. Well, my name is Patrick, and it is good to be back with you guys. I was here in September of last year, and since being with you guys then, I've been so eager to come back because I love this place. I love your team, your staff, and Pastor David. You know, I got to tell you something funny that happened to me a couple weeks ago. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but when logging on to Facebook for the first time of the day, that little time hop pops up, and on this particular day, there was a picture of me from about 10 years ago, and I was kind of taken back. It was a little bit discouraging because the one thing I noticed when this picture popped up was how much more hair I had 10 years ago. I mean, it was kind of depressing, and I thought to myself, I mean, I'm 31 years old. My hair shouldn't be thinning like this. I mean, could it be any worse? Well, God had a way of meeting me in my moment of insecurity, because as I scrolled down my newsfeed, the very next picture that popped up was this. And in that moment, I realized it could be worse. I feel pretty good about myself. In all seriousness, I love Pastor Dave, have a lot of respect for him. Not a lot of churches can say this, but do you know what a privilege and honor it is to have a pastor for over 24 years faithfully leading this place? Yes. And so, as great as your past is here, I'm even more excited to watch the Cross City Church community push into the future as you reach more and more people in the Fresno area. Now, I don't know if today's your first time to church or maybe first time back in a long time, and I understand that sometimes we can approach going to church kind of like going to the dentist, okay? None of us, you know, look forward to going to the dentist. It's not something that's a highlight on your schedule. Do you know what I mean? I mean, anybody ever said, hey, I can't wait to get my teeth cleaned next week? Hopefully this year I've earned a root canal. Anybody? And none of us say that, right? The last time I was at the dentist, I was in the waiting area. They called me back. I sat down on the little recliner chair, and the dental hygienist started flossing my teeth and meanwhile trying to carry on a conversation, which is really almost just impossible. I don't know what they expect, but as she started flossing my teeth, she asked me this question. She said, Mr. Garcia, when was the last time that you flossed your teeth? And so I answered her question by asking a question. I said, well, when was the last time I was here? That was the last time my teeth were flossed. And one of the reasons why a lot of us put off going to the dentist, we come up with so many excuses to not go, is because we feel guilty when we're there. We end up making a lot of promises that we know we're going to back out on. And, you know, I've come to realize that the more your gums bleed as they floss your teeth, the longer it's been since you've actually flossed your teeth. And so I walked out of there looking like I was going trick-or-treating because I had blood stains all over my white shirt. And so I walked out of there just a little bit beat up. I paid him some money while I was there, and I did what we all do. Again, I made some promises that I really had no intention on keeping. Yeah, I'll do better. I'll try harder next time, right? And so I walked away, and I think one of the reasons why a lot of us fail to really, really see Jesus is because so often church can feel like one big long guilt trip, right? And let's be real. I mean, life is full of enough guilt trips. We don't need one more. And so if that's where you're coming from today, let me just ask you one question, okay? More than wanting something from you, is it possible that Jesus wants something for you? I mean, there's a big difference. And so what would change for you if more than wanting something from you, Jesus wanted something for you? We're going to look at a story today that is perhaps the most famous story that Jesus ever told. Okay, it's found in the book of Luke. If you have your Bibles or Bible app on your phone or digital device, I want you to turn there now. We're going to be in Luke chapter 15. It goes like this in the Bible: Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. All right, and Luke serves as kind of like a biography about Jesus. Now realize that as you're turning there that Luke, back in the first century world, was a physician, okay, and he interviewed a bunch of eyewitnesses who knew Jesus, walked with Jesus, all right, and actually saw Jesus be put to death, and then 3 days later crashed his funeral, okay, and so after interviewing all these eyewitnesses, he pieced together this biography about Jesus and was so convinced, okay, was so convinced that Jesus really was the Son of God, that he was who he said he was, that he ended up selling his practice and going and starting churches all across the Mediterranean world at the time. And so in this story, this illustrates what the purpose of the church is really all about, why we celebrate, why we gather. Because Jesus knows that he's talking to two different people. And we're told this earlier in Luke chapter 15, that there's one group that we're going to refer to as the religious insiders. These are the Pharisees, kind of like the pastors back in the first century world. They had their stuff together on the outside, okay? They looked good. They obeyed the Lord. And I mean, it was the person that you aspired to be in Sunday school growing up. I mean, it didn't get any better than the Pharisees. They had the appearance of being close to God. But then on the other side of the spectrum, there is what we will refer to as the rebels, the outcasts, or the sinners, as Luke refers to them. These are the prostitutes, the tax collectors, okay? The thieves, those who make no bones about it, we're not putting on a show, we are just messed up people. And so in Luke chapter 15, Jesus tells this kind of shocking story. And pick up with me in verse 11, here's what we read. Then Jesus said, "A man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the estate that will belong to me.' So he divided his assets between them. After a few days, the younger son gathered together all that he had, and he left on a journey to a distant country, and there he squandered his wealth with a really wild lifestyle." Now let's time out here for just a second, okay? By demanding his inheritance early, before the father actually passed away, this son was basically approaching his dad and saying, "Hey, Dad, I wish you were dead. Okay, I really don't want a relationship with you. I just want what you can offer. I just want what you can provide." This was an extremely offensive request. If you made this request in the first century world, you could be disowned by your family from that point on. And so instead of getting even or upset, the father in kindness gave him the money, and the younger son set out to make a name for himself. And so the son ran away with the family money to this area that Jesus refers to as the distant country. All right, the reality is that this son's problem wasn't boredom. Okay, his problem wasn't that, you know, his dad didn't hug him enough when he was little. He didn't have enough trophies in his room growing up to boost his self-image. I mean, no matter what he was doing, his circumstances weren't the issue. His circumstances simply revealed what he had been building his life upon. His circumstances were kind of like an x-ray machine. They were a revealer of what was inside of him. And yet this is a picture. This is a picture of what it looks like when God gives us freedom to make our own decisions and we run from him. I mean, let's be honest, it's exhilarating at first. It's exciting. I mean, sin is fun at first. And what we do is we romanticize and we idealize what life in the distant country is going to be like. And once we get there, once we arrive, we might experience immediate gratification for a little while. Everybody's going to envy our life once we get there. One of my friends posted on Instagram this past week, "May one day your life be as awesome as you think it is on Facebook." And so here's the thing. Unfulfilled desires, that longing that we all have, it simply means we're not home yet. You see, the distant country, whatever that looks like for you, it makes promises that it can never deliver. Right? And if we're honest, that describes some of our stories. That describes some of the journeys that we're on. You see, back in the first century, James was an early church leader. He was also the half-brother of Jesus who wrote a book in the Bible. Now, James is perhaps one of the greatest pieces of evidence that we have that Jesus really was the Son of God. Why is that? Well, let me ask it like this, okay? What would it take your brother to convince you that he was God? Right, predicting his death and resurrection and then actually pulling it off might just do it, right? And poor James, I mean, can you imagine the amount of pressure that he was under growing up, always to clean his room, always to obey? Mary and Joseph had to walk in and be like, James, I mean, why can't you just be perfect like your brother, Jesus, you know? There's a lot of pressure there. Well, in his letter referred to in the book of James, chapter 3, he talks about how we are all born with this desire, okay, to live life in the distant country. It looks appealing. And the original Greek word literally means to lure away. It's that feeling that you have when you can't not do something. I mean, it's an impulse, it's a drive, and you can't resist it. It's irresistible. A couple months ago, I got my puppy back from duck hunting school. I have a golden retriever dog, and he's awesome. His name is Ryder, okay? And I decided to send him to duck hunting school because he's very intelligent and he needed kind of an outlet. And I thought, well, why not duck hunting school, okay? So he was there for like 6 or 7 weeks and cost a couple hundred dollars. He came back and it's amazing what he learned on his time away. Well, you should know about me that I love animals, okay? I just do. I love pets. And so one night I am walking through the aisles of a store back in Indiana that's called Rural King. Okay, Rural King is kind of like Walmart meets a pet store. It's the only store where you can buy groceries and a pet chicken. Right? I mean, because why not, you know? And so on this particular night, they were having a sale on some brand new ducks that had just hatched. I think that's the proper terminology, hatched, born, whatever. And they were $2.50 a duck. And so I thought, well, I've got three kids. I've always wanted some ducks. I'll buy three of them. And so I come home with three brand new baby ducks, and my kids are absolutely in love. Here's a picture of them, okay? Aren't they precious? You see, it wasn't until the ducks were under my roof that I remembered that also under my roof is a trained duck assassin. I mean, for some reason, impulse took over. I didn't connect the two, right? I just made a decision like that, and oh, they're so cute. And this was several months ago. But when I introduced Ryder to the ducks for the very first time, and he was going crazy, I captured his reaction in this photo. Check this out. Here's Ryder seeing them for the first time. How stupid can you get, right? I mean, I'm holding them back with all that I got, and this dog is strong. I mean, he's wanting to devour these ducks, and I really can't blame him. Why? Because he's just gotten back, and he's doing what he's been trained to do. And so while away at school, he isn't trained to, you know, just walk away from that impulse to chase something. He wasn't trained to, you know, just be passive or ignore when seeing the sight of a duck. Just the opposite. All right, I paid a lot of money for him to not only respond to the smell of a duck, but also the sight of a duck and the scent of a duck, and to be so controlled by the presence of a duck that he is willing to run after and retrieve a duck come hell or high water. And so I can't really blame him, right? And so James says that desire to want something, it takes over, and the more that we can't have it, and the more we're told no, it's like there's this strong impulse inside of us to want it even more and to be more determined. And so we're born with that nature to sin. And so throughout life, we've trained ourselves to, you know, salivate at the sight of more money, at the thought of finally moving into the corner office, respect and acceptance from our friends. We salivate at the thought of upgrading what's in our garage. And you've told yourself, I won't stop until it's mine, until I have complete control over it. The more you tell me no, the more determined I'm going to be. But what if it's only a matter of time until we hit rock bottom? Look at verse 14. Then after he had spent everything, the young son, a severe famine took place in the country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and worked for one of the citizens of that country, who sent him out into the fields to feed pigs. He was longing to just eat the carob pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. And so it just so happened that when this guy maxed out all his credit cards, a famine broke out. And so the collision that took place in his life led to him knowing, maybe for the very first time in his life, what it really meant to be in need. You see, his circumstances left him desperate. And so what he did was he found a job caring for pigs. You see, the cost of living in the distant country ultimately was his dignity. You see, back in the first century world, there was no lower position in society than working with pigs. All right, if you worked with pigs, if you had any kind of association with pigs, you weren't allowed to go to church. You were deemed impure, and so you were rejected. You were seen as an outcast. Now, the truth is, you don't need me to stand up here and tell you just how broken you are. We know that there's something wrong in society, and I think at the end of the day, we also know that there's something off inside of us. And if you push back and say, no, I've got my stuff together. I mean, I'm a pretty impressive person, Patrick. Well, let me just ask you, you ever been lonely before? You ever felt what it means to not have enough? You ever felt like you didn't measure up? Have you ever wanted something that you couldn't have? You see, this is all evidence that we were made for something more. We were made for a home that maybe some of us are living away from right now. Back in 2017, Ben Affleck was Batman in the movie Justice League. At the premiere, he was interviewed by USA Today about why our culture seems to be so fascinated with superheroes. I want you to take a look at what he said in response. He said this: part of the appeal of this genre is wish fulfillment. Wouldn't it be nice if there was somebody who can save us from all of this, save us from ourselves, save us from the consequences of our actions, and save us from people who are evil? And so even those whom we would say have it all, have arrived, are living in the distant country, our citizens there, are saying, hey, look, I've been there and come back only to say, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. I'm just as screwed up as you are. Look at verse 17. The younger son could no longer be in denial. Verse 17, but when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired workers have food enough to spare? But here I am dying from hunger. I'll get up, go to my father, and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, and so treat me like one of your hired workers. Verse 20, and so he got up, went to his father, but while he was still a long way from home, his father saw him, and his heart went out to him, and so he ran and hugged his son and kissed him. And so as this guy hitchhikes back home, he rehearses this speech of how he's going to explain himself. Okay, the pressure's on because it perhaps his ability to convince his father is dependent upon whether or not he'll be welcomed back home. And so there's a lot of pressure here. And don't we say some of the dumbest things when there's a lot of pressure on us, especially when we're not familiar with giving public talks or speeches before, and there's a lot of pressure and we're not all that prepared? Don't we tend to say some dumb things? I was at a wedding earlier this year, and a guy who evidently did not prepare his best man speech gave the best man speech at the rehearsal, and this guy was his college roommate, and come to find out, it was the groom's second marriage, okay? The groom's second marriage, and so when the DJ came and gave the microphone to his best man, okay? Again, not really knowing what to say, the first thing out of the best man's mouth went like this. Well, welcome back, everybody. Hope you kept your receipts this time, you know, I don't know. Little did the son know at the time that there was no need to prepare a speech. It didn't matter. The father's acceptance of him wasn't contingent upon his ability to persuade him. And so Jesus said that the dad ran towards the son when he was still a far way off. Notice the father didn't hold back until hearing the son's explanation. He didn't wait to embrace the son until he could assess just how sorry he really was for what he did. He didn't welcome him with a pointed finger. No, in fact, what we read is that he did just the opposite. He ran towards his son that was still a long way off. Now realize how shocking this was in the first century culture, because if you held any kind of position of honor, you were distinguished in society. Men did not run back then. Okay, this was a humiliating thing to do. You just didn't do it. If you cared at all about your reputation, especially because we know that this guy was wealthy, he had an entire estate to his name, and yet when he sees his son from a far way off, he can't help himself but to run. And so what this would have looked like, he would have picked up his robe, okay? His bare legs would have been shown to everybody. He would have kicked off the sandals, and he would have just started running, anticipating this reunion with his son. Now today, I've learned that some people run for exercise. You know why I don't run? Because I have a car. This father can't help himself, though. He can't help himself, and so he runs to his son. His son tries to explain, look at verse 21. Then his son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, hurry. Okay, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fat calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. Let's throw a huge party. Because this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And Jesus said, so they began to celebrate. I mean, can you imagine how stunned this guy was? I mean, he had played this scenario out a million times, okay, since his bank account was at zero. He played it out a million times as he's feeding pigs and as his friends left his side. And never could he have imagined that his father was going to respond in this way. He could have imagined that his dad would have said, okay, well, let me hear you out on this. Or you know what? You're going to be subjected to this for this amount of time because of what you did. Here's your punishment. He never could have imagined his father responding in this way, celebrating his reunion back home. Now, by commanding that his servants put the best robe on him, his dad was basically saying, hey, son, you can't pay back what you owe me. It's impossible to cancel that debt. It's impossible. You can't even try. You come back naked. You come back ashamed and defined by your guilt because of what you did wrong. But you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to clothe you with honor. You don't deserve it, but I'm going to give it to you anyways. And so here's the thing. Jesus says to each of us today that we don't have to return a slave. And that's good news. You see, we get to be welcomed back home as a son or a daughter. Believe it or not, there's actually a version of this very story in ancient Buddhist literature. There's one primary difference between the story that Jesus tells and the version that's in Buddhist literature. It goes like this. When the son comes back home, He isn't welcomed immediately. He isn't embraced by the father. Instead, what the dad does is he sends his son to enforce labor to be basically in prison working as a slave for over 20 years so that he can work off the debt that he caused when demanding his inheritance early. But not in the story that Jesus tells. What's the difference? Grace. Getting what we don't deserve. Here's where it gets real for us, okay? You may define yourself by your scars and your past and all the wounds of maybe mistakes you made or some of the things that were done to you. You may define yourself by your scars, but Jesus says, I'll exchange it, and how about I define you by my scars? Out of what I did for you. You see, Satan knows your name, but he calls you by your sin. Jesus, he knows your sin, but he calls you by your name. The older brother was ticked off when his younger brother returned home. Look at verse 28. But the older brother became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and appealed to him, but he answered his father, look, all these years I have worked like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your commands. Yet you never once gave me even a goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. Why? Because every teenager, when having some party or sleepover, wants a goat to be there. Verse 31, then the father said to him, son, it was appropriate to celebrate and to be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and now he's found. You see, home is where we find life. You see, the father defends throwing a massive banquet because let's be real, sometimes all it takes is a party for people to know that their future is far more important than their past. Because a lot of us, we think that our worst moment is our defining moment. And that's why we walk around with so much weight and shame. But what if how you see yourself isn't the way that God sees you? You see, he chased other things and tried filling his emptiness in other ways, but home is where he ultimately belonged. Now, I want to get really practical here and identify just four quick takeaways for you to write down or for you to take out your phone and take a picture of the screen, okay? Because to return home, it means first stopping, not running from God any longer, and realizing just how far you've run. And it's possible that the one thing keeping many of us from making that journey back home are some of the misconceptions that we have about home. And so here are just some takeaways to clear the air here, okay? Number one, home is where we deserve nothing, but we have everything. Okay, the son did not deserve to be reinstated back as a son of the estate. He maybe deserved to be a slave. But instead, the father said, what you deserve, I'm not going to give you. And so I'm going to promote you all over again back to being a son, having all the rights of an heir. This is offensive. No wonder the older brother pushed back so hard. Number two, home is where we exchange loneliness for community. Isn't it interesting that when he had all the money in the world, his friends were by his side as he was living in the distant country, but the second his bank account hit zero, all his friends vanished. And so the only community he found at that point was with a bunch of pigs. Yet when being brought back home, he is a member of the family again. Number three, home is where we experience celebration instead of condemnation. No pointed fingers, just open arms. And number four, the most significant, home is where we remember who we are is much greater than what we did. Home is where we remember that who we are is much greater than what we did. One of my closest friends currently fosters a boy that we're going to refer to as Isaac. Isaac's about 10 years old. His mom and dad are addicted to drugs and can no longer take care of him. And so as a young boy, like 5 or 6 years old, he heard from his mom and dad that, you know, I wish you were never born. You're a mistake. You're worthless. You're a piece of trash, and everything else in between. Just things that we would never want our children to hear. Isaac's extremely bright and creative. Now, due to his upbringing, he has severe attachment disorders. He doesn't share emotions very easily or quickly. Why? Because he protects himself, because he's been hurt by that in the past, being vulnerable. And having been in the foster care system for about 3 years now, he'll get attached to a family. They'll want to adopt him, but then a few months in, they'll reverse that decision because of some of the trauma that he's endured. It's triggered, and then they see this whole other side to him that they didn't see when in kind of the testing period. And so my friend and his family have learned that one of Isaac's coping mechanisms when he feels rejected, when he's angered, or when he's really upset is to take a brown grocery bag, put it over his face, but taking a Sharpie right before he puts it over his face, and he writes stupid on the outside. He'll write reject or garbage, worthless, and then he puts it over his head. Sometimes he'll walk around the house for a few hours just with this grocery bag on his head. It's how he deals with some of his wounds. It's his way of hiding and feeling secure. Now, my buddy has a biological son that we'll refer to as Charlie. He's the same age as Isaac. Two of them have grown really close together recently, and a few weeks ago when Isaac was really upset, he put the bag over his head, and he went and sat in the corner. Now, Charlie was sick of Isaac responding in this way and believing all of the lies that had been thrown onto him in the past, and so Charlie, just having enough of it, got up, surprising my friends, okay, as they're seeing what's taking place. He got up and he went over to the corner where Isaac was sitting. Charlie pulled the bag off Isaac's head, and with tears just of passion flowing down his cheeks, welling up out of his eyes, this 11-year-old got right in Isaac's face, and he said, "Stop believing those lies, Isaac, that you write on the bag. They're nothing but lies. You are my brother. Do you hear me? You're a part of this family. You are my brother. You are not allowed to wear that stupid bag any longer, because the words that you write on the outside of it don't define who you are, and nobody in this house sees you as that." That was 3 weeks ago. He hasn't worn the brown bag since then. Sometimes the longer you're gone and the further you are from home, the less that you think a return is possible. But that's not the way Jesus sees it. I can't tell you how many times I am so grateful that Jesus is faithful even when I'm not. And that Jesus doesn't give up on me even when I've given up on myself. So maybe that's what you need to hear today. You've given up on yourself. You can't forgive yourself. You can't believe that you did that. You're still carrying around a lot of weight and shame from what happened to college, whatever that is for you. But Jesus says, that's not how I see you. I mean, if you take that brown bag off your face, what will people see? That's scary. I think the one thing that keeps a lot of us from returning home is fear of what we're going to hear the moment we walk through the door. And so we just choose to stay away, right? So I think for a lot of us, we stay away from home and we keep running from God, because if we walk through that front door, we think we're going to hear this. We're going to hear mistake. But would you return home? Would you walk through that front door if instead of hearing mistake, you were greeted with something that went like this? No, you're not a mistake. You're mine. Some of us, we stay away from home because we don't want to be told all over again, worthless. But what if, instead of hearing this, when you walk through that front door, your Father up in heaven says, "No, you're chosen." Would your response change if, instead of being reminded of what you did, the things that describe your past, instead of being called an addict, You heard. No. You're redeemed. What would change then? Would you come back home if instead of hearing all over again the mistake that you made that one night that ruined your marriage or severed the relationship you had with your kids, your Father in heaven said, I don't see you for that. You're my son. See, Satan knows your name, but he calls you by your sin. Jesus knows your sin, but he calls you by your name. You may define yourself by your scars, but Jesus says, I want to define you by mine. And so home is this place where we remember who we are is much greater than what we did. And so here's how I want to end. Some of you need to stop running and you need to take one step closer to Jesus today. And I don't know what this looks like for you. Here's why. Because we're all at different points in our relationship with Jesus. And so the band is going to play a song here in a second. And if you have a decision to make about taking your next step with Jesus, some pastors and leaders from Cross City will be up front here. During this song, I want you to walk forward and let us as leaders help you take this next step as you take this journey back home. I'm going to pray, we're going to sing, and if you have a decision to make, you come down front, all right? Let's pray. Jesus, my story, as you know, goes like this, that even when I've given you every right, even when I've backed out on every promise, even when I've done things I said I would never do, I say things I promised to never say, and I've given you every right to turn your back and to leave me, never once have you given me divorce papers. And that's not just true for me. That can be true for every one of us in here. And so for a lot of us, we maybe can wrap our heads around you forgiving us, but for a lot of us, it's time that we take a step by forgiving ourselves and letting ourselves up off the mat and believing that who we are is much greater than what we did, not because of something that we've done, but all because of what you did on the cross in our place, Jesus. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.